Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. Very nice to have you aboard, starting a bit later than normal because we were hearing NPR coverage as the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings moved a step closer. She's moved a step closer to confirmation after the Judiciary Committee voted. Democrats boycotting the vote, pointing to what they call the damage she would do to health care and reproductive and voting rights, and the fact the vote took place amid the presidential election. So Republicans took advantage of that situation and did it very quickly. And we are with you now. So we have a lot to talk about. Not only that, but many, many other stories. Let me introduce everybody to you. My thanks to the panel for holding on and hanging tight while we waited for that procedural move. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, Big Joe.
Good to hear your voice. We also go to our good friend Jen Smith, whose new title, catch this, engagement editor for the Seattle Times Education Lab, of course, formerly with the Berkshire Eagle, working remotely, still with us here in heart and spirit, and we are thrilled to have Jen with us. Good morning. How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm well. Thanks for having me on for a bit.
How's the new...
Are you out there?
No, I'm still in the beautiful North Adams, but my time here is winding down.
How's the new gig so far?
Aside from my hunger clock being completely thrown by working on a different time zone, it's been great.
We also welcome Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics, Vera Acarias-Kelly. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Wonderful to have you aboard. And Linda Ellerbe is here, a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist, a dear friend, and we're very, very happy to have her with us this morning as well. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Well, it's wonderful to have you all here. Let us get to the news. Well, we'll spend a moment or two on this. It is a procedural thing, but it is history, and it is it as we just heard, if you were listening to the NPR coverage, that it is quite unusual that usually Democrats are at least a part of the fight, and this was not the case this time. Amy Coney Barrett moving a step closer to confirmation after the Judiciary Committee vote. You just heard from Lindsey Graham saying, look, we didn't want to be here, but they did it. They were the ones that took away the 60 votes, so here we are. And I don't know whether that works for them / Lindsey Graham politically or not, but that is where we are. And so we move forward now with an almost certain confirmation for Amy Coney Barrett. Alan.
Think about this. A lifetime on the court for a very young woman. So she's going to be there for a long, long time. They're hypocrites. We know they're hypocrites. They said that a year in advance was... they could do it for a year in advance when Obama nominated somebody. And here with literally 2 weeks to go to the election, they do it. And it's disgusting. The other thing that occurs to me is it was 12 to 10. You know, there was 10 Democrats, 12 Republicans. I think that's right. And think about that for a second. The history of the United States will be forever set by two votes on a committee. It just seems to be Alice in Wonderland as far as I'm concerned. So those are some of my initial feelings.
Linda, what do you make a lot in that coverage just from a moment ago? They were saying that part of the reason that the Democrats did what they just did of not showing up for this particular vote was because that many people in the Democratic Party felt that, especially in this election time, that the Democrats were not strong enough and were not forceful enough during the hearing and trying to block it. So this was a way to try to save face. What do you make of that argument and the overall decision to do this?
Well, you know what we say about hindsight. we could go back and question everything. I think the Democrats could have been stronger in the beginning. I don't think that's the issue, and I'm not going to be distracted on that. And the issue is not whether this woman is qualified. The issue is the process here and what happened. The issue is not whether she's qualified. To me, The issue is whether these Republicans in the United States Senate are qualified to serve, and to my mind, they are not. And today was a perfect example. We have just had Lindsey Graham preach and say to young women, and NPR pointed it out, and everybody's pointing it out, and he said, you're going to have a justice, he's speaking to young conservative women, you're going to have a justice on the court that you should be proud of. You should be proud of. Thank you, Mr. Graham, for once more telling me what you, Lindsey, think I, as a woman, should feel.
Great point. Vera.
I don't know that the Democrats could have done a whole lot other than point out what is wrong with the process. And I think Biden's response, of course, is interesting to say, now we will study this. Because to me, it does seem a little strange, and maybe that is because I'm, you know, not, I wasn't born in this country, and I sometimes think structures need to be adjusted, changed, or reformed, but I find it very strange that people are on this on the Supreme Court for a life term appointment. I think that, to me, seems a potentially problematic issue in general. So I think the idea, actually, it was described in the, you know, by Nina Totenberg earlier as a punt. Well, I think it's actually worth studying how our institutions operate, and maybe it is time to reform some of them.
I suspect, Joe, for whatever it's worth, that this commission will come up with whoever was appointed to it. And you better believe that Mr. Biden will pick the people who are reflective of where he wants to go. So It may well be, since he's always said, I don't want to, you know, pack the court, I don't want to expand the court, but he realizes that the future of America is now in it, that he will pick the people to be on this bipartisan group who will come up with what he wants.
Jen Smith.
I agree with Vera in that I also grapple with just the fact that this system is set up the way it is, that these appointments are for as long as they are. I'm grappling with, Senator John Cornyn, a Republican from Texas, was talking after the nomination. And, the only thing I agreed with him is when he called it surreal. But when he called it theatrics of having the Democrats put up photos of people on the Affordable Care Act at their seats instead of being there to vote. But I think we can't forget in 2016 that the Republicans refused to hold even a hearing for Merrick Garland. So I think it's a really puzzling time. I think if ever there was a time to call for changes to the Supreme Court system and the justice system, this may be that moment. It's something I will definitely be watching as well. But what has been set in motion has been set in motion.
Joe,
yes.
If I could add one little thing to this. I think we as journalists do a disservice when we continue to say, and they're doing this 2 weeks before the election. 40 million Americans have already voted. They're doing this in the middle of an election.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good point. Good point.
And so where do you think we go from here, in the sense of, because we know that the question is going to come up in the debate tonight about the court, the quote-unquote packing of the court, the 60 Minutes interview, I believe, that a small snippet of has been released, has Joe Biden saying that he wants a bipartisan commission to look at that if he were elected. I don't know. Is that, speaking of punting, isn't that what that is, Alan?
Yeah, well, that's what he's doing. He's punting, and I think appropriately so. He said he would give everybody his opinion before the election, and now he's giving you the opinion. I'm setting up a commission. The Cuomos knew it. He knows it. When in doubt, set up a commission.
What does it hurt? Let's see. We go to Robert, who says, I don't understand how Lindsey Graham stated that it was a unanimous vote rather than it was a unanimous vote of those present. The Democratic votes were abstentions, which are normally counted as a no vote. We go to Julius, who says,
"Yo, well, can I, Joe?"
Yeah, yes.
The other thing is, remember that Lindsey Graham is in a very tough fight, and some polls actually show him behind or have shown him behind. So what we heard today was what I could only call a very reasonable Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
You know, the way he sounds.
Well, yes. I mean, certainly compared to the Brett Kavanaugh screaming at us, Lindsey Graham, yes.
Yeah, the madman approach. Yeah.
Paul writes to us and says, I feel compelled to point out that Republicans for years have referred to lower courts as activist judges and activist courts when rulings didn't go their way. They responded by creating an activist Supreme Court. What is happening to this country, asks Paul. Julia says, far from being the most qualified candidate for the Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett is one of the least qualified in terms of expertise on the bench and before the bench. Legal expertise is only one aspect of a complex process of judgment. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our group. We'll move on to other topics. We welcome your thoughts, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Playing music from the Spencer Davis Group this morning. Spencer Davis passed away earlier this week. We have our entire playlist posted online at wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. All right. Let's go to another story here in regards to Iran election interference. The U.S. government concludes that Iran was behind threatening emails sent to Democrats. The U.S. officials on Wednesday night accused Iran of targeting American voters with faked but menacing emails and warned that both Iran and Russia had obtained voter data that could be used to endanger the upcoming election. The disclosure by the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, at a hastily called news conference marked the first time this election cycle that a foreign adversary has been accused of targeting specific voters in a bid to undermine Democratic confidence. Just 4 years after Russian online operations marred the 2016 presidential vote. The claim that Iran was behind the email operation, which came into view on Tuesday as Democrats in several states reported receiving emails demanding they vote for President Trump, was leveled without specific evidence. Other U.S. officials speaking privately stressed that Russia still remained the major threat to the 2020 election. On Thursday, Iran summoned the Swiss envoy in Tehran, which handles U.S. affairs there, to condemn the baseless accusations of meddling in the U.S. elections. Hours after Ratcliffe's announcement, the spokesman for Iran's mission at the United Nations already described the allegations as absurd. Alan, how absurd are they?
Well, I don't want to go to Iran for a second here. Not that I ever want to go to Iran, but I want to go to Russia because I think that that's the important player here. We know what the Russians want. The Russians want Trump. I'm not so sure what the Iranians, if they did anything at all, want other than to confuse things over here and to flex a little muscle. And frankly, I don't know. But the Russians, that's a different story. And we do know that Trump tends to replicate his successes from the last election this time. And so it is not surprising that we see the Russian card being played by those guys once again, and they have every reason to do it. And let's remember, this is a president of the United States who has not said one bad word about the Russians, period. He loves them. He loves Putin. It's all on the record. So from my point of view, the Russian thing is totally expected. Okay, I'm going to pass to the rest of the panel because I don't understand what the Iranians are up to.
The senators posed as members of the white supremacist Proud Boys and claimed they had voter data that revealed for whom their targets voted, but that was a false flag, according to the United States. The director of national intelligence said that the community believes that Iranian and Russian operatives obtained voter record information, which enabled Iran to target some people with intimidating emails based on party registration about how they'd better vote for Donald Trump or, in quotes, or else. Vera.
Well, what I found most interesting about Radcliffe's statements and the press conference was the fact that he seemed to indicate that this was meant as an attack on Donald Trump, which I find fascinating because I still attempt to logically understand how when you send a threat to Democratic voters and tell them to vote for Trump, how that's a direct threat against Trump. But you know, clearly there is a lot of meddling going on. There's a number of countries are involved, and it is important to pay close attention. I think the intelligence communities have closed some of the loopholes, from what I understand, by sharing information with major tech firms who are also attempting to reduce the influence of those kinds of messages. Now, from what I understand, those registrations, voter registrations, were from 2018. So the data that was used to attack particular voters in Florida and Alaska and a couple of other states were outdated because we know some of the voters no longer lived at the addresses that were listed. So it's an interesting effort to confuse voters in this country, or also sent the message that you can't trust the system. Again, I don't know that I necessarily trust the positioning of Radcliffe. There probably is meddling going on, but not to the extent that we have seen in the past. I have confidence that some of the intelligence communities collaborate with tech firms and get those kinds of attacks more under control than what we saw in 2016.
So Vera, let's ask this question. Assuming everything you've said, as always, is on target, what in the world, where in the world are the Iranians going? You know, the Russians we know, but the Iranians, who Trump has used as, one of his main targets to excite his base and other people, what in the world would they be doing helping Trump?
Well, if they were involved with it, my only explanation would be that the current regime relies on Iranian nationalism since the killing of General Soleimani, if you recall. The Iranian clerics rely on Iranian nationalism to unite the population against the United States. The mullahs have a really difficult time keeping the country in line because there are consistent protests happening related to the lack of freedom, the treatment of women, the poor economic conditions. Iranian people in general are deeply disgruntled with this regime. The only thing that gives them a mantle of protection is the fact that the United States has so vilified and attacked all of Iran and its population and has not distinguished between different groups, that this might be helpful in strengthening the hold of this regime.
So do you think they're helping? They're actually helping Trump? Or do you think it's just dissonance?
Well, I mean, I think what they are basically thinking is any government in the United States now is hostile. It doesn't matter who it is. Trump is the most hostile. Biden will be hostile. There's no return to the prior nuclear agreement. I mean, this is not the path that's beneficial to the mullahs. Iran is in a tough spot. So they need an enemy. They need an outside enemy to unite the country against. The United States is always the best path for them. So to them, it really doesn't matter as long as they have a hostile force.
Jen?
Alan, if I can address your point for just a moment.
Yes.
Why Iran? I think we may be looking at this backwards. It's not a question of why it's in Iran's interest. It's a question of why it's in Trump's interest. And I think that we may be applying more reasoning than the Trump campaign or Donald Trump is. To Donald Trump, this simply says, Iran is trying to fix the election is better than saying Russia is. Russia is his buddies. Nobody likes Iran. And he gets to say, outside influence is working. Just as he has said, this is a man who's trying to rig the American election. Okay? And we know this. He has claimed, he has already said this. So he says mail-in voting is unreliable and then proceeds to make it unreliable so that people don't trust it. Now it's in his interest to say there is outside interference in elections. Therefore, the vote can't be trusted. I think it's just that simple, period.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Jen?
You know, I think in the history of elections, there is tell me a country that doesn't say that their elections have been interfered with in some way. I think Iran, in its official statement on these accusations, said, you know, the U.S. is guilty of interfering with other countries' elections. So it's just this back and forth. My biggest concern as a voter is why I would be receiving these emails. And it's pretty widespread. Democratic voters in Florida, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Alaska. So that's just a wide swath of geography to begin with. All reported emails, receiving emails to authorities. So how are people getting contacted? And when places like Florida say that the system is secure, I sure as heck think it casts doubt on that. And, you know, I think the bigger question, too, is what will we actually do about it? As Linda pointed out earlier, the elections are already well underway. How does this new information actually impact how we look at the results? And, you know, I don't think anyone has a great answer for that. There's no sanctions or things, and it's not going to change, you know, the votes that have already been cast. So I think those are the bigger questions to ask as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also, don't you think, Jen, with tonight's debate coming up, that, you know, Trump is somewhat desperate that for Biden to make a mistake, because he can't seem to sort of thread the needle and control himself and not attack people like Fauci and others, who scientists who have the trust of the majority of the American public. And in many ways, all means are on the table here to try and squeeze out some kind of messaging that comes out of government agencies that identifies some problem that only supposedly a strong president such as Trump could resolve. I mean, that is the messaging underlying these kinds of attempts to create insecurity in the American electoral system.
Sure. But, you know, I think at this point, I think the insecurity is already there. You know, will it come into play during the debates tonight? I'm sure, absolutely. I think each side is going to do what it can to bait the other one into saying something. And both candidates are prone to saying something inflammatory. So, you know, it's a matter of we'll watch and see what the actual comments are. But that's, you know, a whole other story. And I think, again, the heart of this matter is that you know, what will happen as a result of, you know, I don't know if this at this point in the game anyone is going to do anything against Iran or Russia. We haven't done so at all these past couple of years. I mean, there have been some sanctions, and how effective have those been? You know, not very.
Right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have a wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will continue with those letters and move on to other subjects as well. First News with Ray Graff.
Support comes from...
Somebody help me, yeah. Somebody help me now. Won't somebody tell me what I've done wrong? When I was just a little boy of 17, I hated girl, she was my queen. She didn't love me.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Linda Ellerbe, and Vera Akarios-Kelly. We've been talking about the story about interference in the election. Meanwhile, back at the White House, President Trump and his advisors have repeatedly discussed whether to fire FBI Director Christopher Wray after Election Day, a scenario that could also imperil the tenure of Attorney General William Barr. As the president grows increasingly frustrated that federal law enforcement has not delivered his campaign the kind of last-minute boost that the FBI provided in 2016, according to people familiar with the matter. The conversations among the president and senior aides stem in part from their disappointment that Wray in particular, but Barr as well, have not done what Trump had hoped, indicate that Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, his son Hunter Biden, or other Biden associates are under investigation. Like others, they spoke on the condition of anonymity. In the campaign's closing weeks, the president has intensified public calls for jailing his challenger, much as he did for Hillary Clinton, his opponent in 2016. Trump has called Biden a criminal without articulating what laws he believes the former vice president has broken. So, three parts of this that I'd like to get to. One, of course, is how this will have an impact on tonight's debate. Two, I don't quite understand the you put this out as we're talking about getting rid of the FBI director after Election Day. If you lose, if Trump were to lose, then that what good would that do anyway? And if he were to be reelected, is that supposed to help his election chances in some way? I don't quite get that. Alan?
He wants to call me.
He wants his Comey, right. Yeah.
Period.
He did. He wanted to replicate what he had the last time. This guy won the last time, so everything he did the last time, he wants to do this time. It's that simple. However, I have to say that Wray has been an exemplary guy, but what really makes me a happy camper, maybe I shouldn't be, maybe it's the ultimate in Schadenfreude, is his going after his attorney general, who has been nothing but slavish in his, kissing of the rear end of, of Trump. So, if anybody deserved what he is getting now, he's it. Now, does he go home at night and tell his trusted family, we have to put up with this because this is just what he wants to do in order to get reelected, but we'll be all right. I don't know, but it really is something to behold.
Linda?
Well, as I said, I think, he wants his Comey. He wants the government, which he wants to control, but wants people to believe as independent, the government. He wants the FBI to stand up and do just what James Comey did and say, Joe Biden is under investigation. It worked last time. Alan is right. He wants to replicate everything as it went down last time, to the point of getting his crowds to chant lock her up about Mayor Whitmer. I'm sorry. This is silliness beyond belief, and I hope it's not working. I just hope it's not working. However, this is how will it be handled tonight? the whole thing of the debates is, it's very simple. The questions for tonight are easy. Has Trump changed? Will he follow the rules? Is he capable of controlling himself? How will Joe handle attacks on his family? Will Joe lose it? Will he stutter? Will he falter? Most important of all tonight is, to whom are they speaking, or do they think they are speaking? It's not a debate. This is another sideshow. It's a circus, and I'm sorry that the nation has to watch it, or actually we don't have to watch it, but I'm sorry it's there tonight. It serves to me no purpose.
And why did Joe say yes? That's, to me, the most interesting.
I'm with you on that, Alan.
Yeah, and because he had obviously the president
had
was
a win.
Backed out of the yeah, right.
He had a huge win the first time, and so why in the world does he need this? He could only lose. He's way ahead in the polls, if not way ahead. He's respectably ahead in the polls. Some of them shift, but basically the national polls are pretty good for him. And the state polls,
I sort of understand why Biden agreed, because if he was the one to pull out, it could be used by the Trump campaign and the surrogates as saying Biden is afraid, Biden is not capable of sustaining this campaign. I understand. He's the one who has to be there and be the adult. I just think there was no way to pull out.
Well, on the other hand, had he very early said, this misbehavior was so bad and the American people saw it, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to stand for this. It would have been strong. You know, I hear what you're saying there, Vera, but I still believe he didn't have to do it.
Well,
and
to,
he shouldn't have done it.
To Linda's very good point about who each of them are talking to. So in Joe Biden's case, who do you think he is, since he has decided that he is going to do it now, who is he trying to speak to?
Well, Joe Biden has, Joe Biden has to appeal to moderate Republicans, and he's doing that.
Yeah.
They're letting the word out now that that, you know, we'll see on my cabinet. I intend to appoint a whole bunch of Republicans to the cabinet. Brilliant, because that gives moderate Republicans. You don't need 100%. You get 5%, 6%, 7% of the Republicans. You're a big winner. So he starts talking about who he's going to put into his cabinet. And there are going to be a lot of Republican names that are mentioned. Very smart.
Jen?
And you can't forget that this is a personal issue for Biden. You know, that the strategy is to continue to bring up the controversy over Hunter Biden's laptop and his emails, and it hopes that has the same effect that it did in 2016. You know, that's definitely going to be one of those tactics. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Biden's choice to be there was, you know, to personally, you know, stand up for his son. That's part of how he operates too. And I think he also has to be careful of how he plays into that as well. You know, in some ways, you know, Biden's his own trap in that regard.
It also seems to me, though, that again, we get back to this question that we've been asking since the beginning of debate season, which is, what's the point? What are we? Who's the undecided voter right now? And so I kind of latch on to Linda's thought that it's all a sideshow, because who are we talking to right now? Who are the 1% maybe who are out there? As Linda also said, as you've all made the point today, the election's going on right now. The mm-hmm. millions and millions and millions of people have already voted.
But Joe, we see that 5% of the people, of the potential voters, are undecided. Now think about that. You know, here's Biden leading in some polls by 7 points, in some polls by 9 points. 5 points, if you got them all, you could clean the table. So I do think there's still enough people here that you have to be very careful about how you're going to play this.
Mm. Yeah, because you could screw it up.
For me, what's interesting, Joe, is the question of who are the Republicans or who is Trump trying to entice to vote, right? So apparently there's this group of voters who are attending Trump rallies, but they had not been registered voters and they're trying to register them all to then actually go to the polls and vote. Now, I'm not sure that if people attend Trump rallies are into the sort of the theater and the circus, but they're not serious voters. They're not really the group that is easily motivated to show up. Now, the president hopes to his chaos maneuvering by claiming that Christopher Wray is not to be trusted, that the CIA and the FBI are, you know, they sort of nourish this secret society, and they're not really advancing the United States interests, and all of these sort of conspiracy theories is what the president believes will get some of these voters that have been non-voters but enthusiastic rally attendees would get these people to the polls. I'm not sure this will actually work, but this is sort of his narrow angle that he still has, and he's hoping to achieve that in events like the debate tonight by insulting or trying to tempt Biden into saying something destructive.
Of course, the Democrats. Of course, the Democrats doing the same thing. I mean, you know, the brilliance of Obama. Okay, I'm going to admit it. You know, I had a tear in my eye last night when I was watching Obama. I said, I had such a feeling of relief that this great man was, you know, was out there and saying the truth and telling it in the way he was. But you know that the whole idea, a huge part of this, is that Obama is going to be expected to believe to produce potential non-voters to his side, and often that's the people of color. So in the same way that Trump wants to get his people out there, so do the Democrats, and this was a hell of an effective way of doing it, wasn't it?
Mm.
You know, I think it'll be interesting to watch tonight, especially because I believe, and NBC's Kristen Welker is the first Black woman to moderate a presidential debate. And knowing that, I wonder if there's anything that she will ask. You know, that's the tough job of going last, too. That could bring about information that could, you know, cause voters to think differently.
Well,
I don't know. I'm curious what anyone else is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And how he's attacked her very notoriously. And I think it's how, you know, I mean, that's sort of some of the things I'll be watching for is how, you know, will he go right into that as well? I think Trump was coached to try to temper himself when he was being, questioned by Savannah Guthrie. I don't know. I'm curious what everyone else on the panel will be actually watching for tonight.
So to what end? I mean, here's the brilliance of it. He goes after a woman of color. That's a signal, right? That's a signal, a racist whistle to his group. You know, we can't have this. We can't have this woman and a woman of color which is everything that is motivating my campaign. We know where these Republicans are, and we know why that 40% is sticking with them.
Yeah.
I think.
Linda?
No, it's more than just that 40%. Sadly, look, I have a very dear friend. We have been friends 71 years. She lives in Texas. She voted for Hillary Clinton. She can't stand Donald Trump. We spoke recently, and I said something about Biden, and she said, no, I'm not going to vote for Biden. And I said, why? And she said, I don't want to talk about it, and she wouldn't talk about it. And then she said, well, maybe I could vote for Biden, but I can't vote for her. And I said, I want to explain that. And she said, no, I don't want to explain it. She's just too progressive. And she said, Linda, we've been friends 71 years. I don't want to discuss this. I don't want to discuss it all. I don't want to hurt our friendship. Well, the effect of that has been actually to hurt our friendship because I don't know where we go from here. We have, among two dear lifelong friends, opened a whole subject now where we can't talk about it. It's the elephant in the room, and I can't help but feel that I'm not alone in this, that all over this country, this is happening, that there is, and of course I am left with the feeling that my friend is racist, because she will not explain why she won't vote for Biden except to say it's Kamala. But she insists this is not racist, but we can't talk about it, so I have no idea. But it sure feels racist. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well,
she's not a part of his base, is my point. She's not part of his base. But she's going to not vote for president, which is a vote for Trump.
God, I love it when you're on the show.
Those are the people I'm worried about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second now. If she's a regular Trump voter, a would-be Trump voter, and she's not voting.
No, she's not. She voted for Hillary Clinton.
No, no. Oh, I see. She voted for Hillary. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Stand corrected.
She can't stand Donald Trump and is very open about it. But she's not going to vote for president because she feels Kamala Harris is too radical left progressive.
Now, which is a framing that only Trump and his people have actually advanced. because
it's not true.
Exactly. I know it's not true.
She's
not
even remotely progressive.
But
she's not going to vote for Mark Progressive.
There's at least one instance.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody just said something good, but I didn't hear it because it's so many people.
There was a little bit of a salad there. Well, you know, one of the things about it is that, and then you have to wonder about, okay, how does that influence? I mean, yes, that's anecdotal, but how does that extrapolate into polling and the numbers that we've seen, and especially in the conversations that we've had this week of being so gun-shy of the numbers that the Democrats are so gun-shy over the numbers because of what happened 4 years ago. And wondering how accurate they are.
You know, that's right. Yesterday I had a long conversation, of course, for the Capital Connection. I hope you'll all listen with the Siena poll people, and that's the New York Times, and about waiting. How much do you wait? Did we in the last election there was a sense I had that they overweighted college, graduates and college attendees, and underweighted people who were not in that category. So that's going to be very important in terms of what we see happening to the polls.
Mm. Jen?
I was just going to say that I still think there's plenty of rooms for surprises when it comes to how voters will actually make their decisions. I think there's a lot of things that are still murky, and I think you can't ignore some of these significant voting groups like the Latino vote that could potentially surprise us in this election. I think Latino voters are really an interesting group to follow, because you have some Latinos who fall into the dreamer category, who are really concerned about their citizenship status. And you have some who are very much Trump supporters because they just believe in conservative ideals. And I think that's a very uncertain group if they go to the polls. And I think that's the other factor.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with Jen. There's another group, the Latino vote is very important, but Indian Americans as well. I think very interesting.
Absolutely.
Because you have a very strong pro-business orientation, and there is a significant portion that actually likes some policies.
We can't forget the Trump administration. Yeah, you can't forget Howdy Modi.
Right, yeah. So these are very interesting times. We have to sort of wait out how certain voter blocks actually respond and what they identify as preferential policies, one over the other. And I think the main questions are economic policies and interpretations of those versus health policy. I mean, those are the central two questions that actually will decide the outcome of this election.
And will there be enough voters to come out in influential numbers on this. I think that's really the big thing to watch.
Mm.
Do you guys trust the polls? I want to say that because I want to tell you something. The polls were right in the last presidential election. They got it slightly wrong in a couple of states. We're talking about a handful of votes. But when you took a look at the way in which the polls reported things, they weren't wrong. They were right.
Well, they were right in the popular vote, but not factoring in the Electoral College.
Well, yes, because of Joe, as what I just said.
No.
In a few states, there was a handful. You know, we're talking 76,000 votes, I think, altogether, which is nothing. But the polls calling you say the popular vote, the popular vote meaning, and the state votes, state by state, were correct.
The thing about it, and I agree with you, I absolutely agree with you. What worries me, though, is we seem to be doing the same thing. You know, the New York Times on the front page of their paper on the week before, well, all during the season, but on, you know, the day before and on Election Day, said that Hillary Clinton has a 93% chance of winning. And they're doing the same thing now, which I think is just scary because because of all of the reasons we just mentioned of how. You asked the general question of, do you trust the polls? And that's where I get a little iffy because I don't know how much you can trust it when, if you're saying overall that, I forget what the number I just looked at, it was, I think, 82% or something, chance of Joe Biden winning. I mean, is that accurate? I don't know. I don't know if I can trust that.
May I say something here?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, no, go ahead. Was that you, Vera? Go ahead.
I think it was Jen.
Jen?
I'm sorry, Jen. Please. Go ahead.
I think it's also very different sort of election process, and I think there are some things that the polls can't possibly capture, but I'll default to Linda here.
Linda.
Well, let's remember.
I was just going to say that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt anyone. Okay, I'll go ahead. I don't trust polls. And the reason I don't trust polls is because very few people, there are some, are going to say to a pollster, yeah, I'm a racist. We vote by secret ballot. That is the beauty of it. That is also dangerous. Last time, we didn't factor in the fact that people lie to pollsters. And they do. I do not wish to go down that road that Joe was just talking about one more time, where everybody's saying, look what the polls show, look what the... And Alan, I know you're technically right, but she's not president, and he is.
Well, that's right.
And the polls...
But I'll tell you where I'm technically right. I'm technically right. The polls were right. They were correct, except there was a handful
except
of votes.
Except she's not president.
That's right. And you know why? Because a certain FBI director opened his big yap and was, I think, not paid to do that.
And also because there were people who lied to pollsters and then went in and voted for Donald Trump because they did not want to say to pollsters that they didn't want to vote, they didn't want a woman leader, and they did not, that they simply did not want black people to have the same rights as white people.
That's
or people
true.
Of color, or immigrants coming in. They didn't want them to have rights. And then people don't like to be thought of as that person who will say those things. Well, there are some who do, but most don't. It's very easy to say, no, that's not me. I'm going to go vote for this or I'm going to do that. And, Alan, as you say, it was the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. But the Electoral College came about because a margin of votes in a few states. It is votes. It is polls.
Handful of votes.
And I'm...
Mm-hmm. And Linda, don't you think that maybe the reality is a little different 4 years later, that people are actually pretty clear of what kind of ideas they endorse and what they don't endorse? I mean, the issue of embarrassment of voting for Trump, I think Trump voters are proudly endorsing Trump. If you see the flags, the size of the flags, and they sort of, you know, the thrones that they build, some of them build in the front yard, to endorse
Oh, well, I agree. You're quite right.
Totally,
he lifted up the rock and let what was under it crawl out and encouraged it to crawl out. I agree. I'm not even talking about them. I'm talking about the people like my friend who voted, who are moderate Republicans, who weren't Trump supporters, but who are having problems going to Joe and Kamala. And I'm scared to death of that.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. Well, let's go around with the panel this morning, and we have a lot of letters, so we'll get to those. We welcome yours as well, panel at WAMC.org. I'll go through them. Panel, if you have any comments, just break in and say what's on your mind. Norm says, remember, to change away from Trump, they would have to admit that they were wrong in backing Trump. They would have to admit that they are biased and bigoted and racist as Trump is, two things to which people do not admit easily. Gail says, Linda, you're right. I have a friend who has the same attitude. After 37 years, I finally see her soft racism, quote unquote. I hear the racism when she talks about issues such as Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, Antifa, and the protesters. She was more concerned about respect for the flag when Colin Kaepernick kneeled on the football field during a football game than what was happening to young black men being murdered by police. It is disheartening to me, and it has affected our friendship. We go to John, who says, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say there is no such thing as soft racism. It's racism or it's not.
Yes.
That is correct. And I would agree with the issue of anybody who mentions that they're disliking Kamala Harris because supposedly she's so progressive and so far on the left. What that basically is a cover term for is that the interpretation that any African-American or minority person critiquing policy is equated with threats from Black Lives Matter and sort of this hyper-racialized interpretation of critical diverse voices. It is profoundly based in racism.
John says, Kamala's effect on the election?
Here, here.
Question mark. Is it possible that misogyny is a bigger factor in the U.S. elections than racism?
It's right up there.
I think they're all factors.
Bigger or not.
The ranking may be off, but it's up there.
Well, there is a question in my mind as to whether or not the same people are the people who believe in both of those.
Yeah, crossover.
No, well, I mean, you know.
Yeah, are both racist
misogynist,
and misogynist.
Yeah,
misogynist, right, racist, yes. Yeah. Paul says, why do you believe that Iran is interfering with our elections? I cannot take it seriously. There is no evidence except alleged intelligence claims of dubious merit. Trump wants a war with Iran. We are being prepared for it. Carol.
Well, I mean, the great fear was that after the killing of Soleimani, this would happen, right? But, I mean, certainly the Iranians are keeping things in mind in terms of what's been done to their regime, especially their country, depending on who you ask about that interpretation. But, you know, clearly the Iranian regime tries to and will continue to try to take revenge, yes.
Carol writes, considering the Trump administration's animus against Iran, why on earth would they be guilty of disguising voter interference by assuming the voice of the Proud Boys? And isn't Radcliffe just another Trump toady? Is it possible that the Russians have provided a bogus Iranian internet address?
I mean, all of these things are possible, right?
Yes. Amy says, I think Joe Biden made the right choice to recommend a commission to discuss changing the number of Supreme Court justices. Yes, this is a punt, but it is a justified one. To change the number of justices is not to be taken lightly, and there is no guarantee that more conservative justices will be appointed and make it even easier to forward conservative agendas. We go to Kevin, who says, so far about 40 million early votes have been cast in 2016. 123 million were cast. Since it's all about turnout panel over, is that right? I don't think that's right.
That's not right, Joe.
I don't know. So he's saying, so far about 40 million early votes have been cast. In 2016, 123 million votes were cast. So that would be where we are now compared to Election Day. But I thought I heard that we were up already surpassed what we were in 2016. So I'm not sure.
I certainly heard that.
Yeah. I just have to check that number. Since it is all about turnout panel over under on votes being above 123 million. So I don't know. I have to check the numbers. I think
the latest from the New York Times says just over 42,000. Votes have been cast so far.
And where were
42,000?
42,000? 42 million.
42, I'm sorry. Yes, 42 million.
And where are
42,143,836.
All right.
As of yesterday. That was around 30% of the total number of votes cast in the 2016 election. And there are still, at that point,
all together.
Yeah, all together. Okay.
Has everyone on the panel voted yet, I wonder?
I have, and I'm worried about it. Roselle and I voted by mail. We voted by mail.
We dropped ours off at town hall day before yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't. We're not allowed to yet in New York. Tomorrow, I believe.
That's true.
I'm voting right after this.
Yes.
It was a good feeling, I must say. It felt like I struck a personal blow for the United States Constitution when I put my ballot in that little box at town hall.
You had a smile on your face. It was unrivaled in the picture that I saw.
I did. You could see it through the mask, couldn't you, Joe?
You certainly could. And I misspoke.
By the way, I want to just comment on one thing because I know we're starting to close round
running
up
down,
here.
But
in that and this goes to the letter from the fellow who talked about that he thinks Trump is setting us up for a war with Iran. Okay, here's what we are living through right now. An October surprise every day. Because every day Trump tries something else, throws it against the wall, and hopes it will stick. Today, it's I want my own Comey. I do not, and Alan, I know you do not, we all do not rule out this man taking us to war because this country does not vote against a wartime president. Nothing is impossible here. Nothing.
Not with him. He has nobody.
All of that and the terrors of that, which I believe are real, I want to say that I'm really sorry today that we're not going to have time to talk about my favorite story of the week, which is Giuliani and Borat.
Well, I don't know. We have time, actually. We can do that story. I want to just very quickly correct something that I just said. In my mind, it's Friday. It's not. It's Thursday. So early voting in New York begins on Saturday. So I said I was going to vote tomorrow. So it's Saturday. Okay. Saturday is the day that early voting begins in New York. And before we get 800 letters, I just wanted to correct that. Okay.
Sure. Giuliani also, you know, the Borat is one thing, but then comes the issue of, you know, his lying on the bed and with his hands in his pants. This is now Giuliani.
Adjusting his shirt, Alan, tucking in his shirt.
You know what? Linda? We've been married too long. You stole my punchline from me.
You know what? I'm not married. Ross and I never married. We've been together 34 years, but we're not married. Well,
I hear you.
I have never actually seen Rolf tuck in his shirt in that manner.
Well, I don't know. First of all, far too much tucking of the shirt in between Giuliani and Jeffrey Toobin. But let's just say,
don't
Rudy.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Too soon?
So Rudy Giuliani denies that he did anything wrong in the new Borat movie. The man who is Trump's personal lawyer has become caught up in a Sacha Baron Cohen's new Borat satire, which will be released tomorrow on Amazon Prime, after he was shown with an actress in an edited scene. Still photos and descriptions of the scene from Mr. Cohen's new film will be released on Friday. They were posted on social media early Wednesday after The Guardian reported that the movie contained a compromising scene featuring Mr. Giuliani, the New York City mayor. This is an edited scene following an actress impersonating a reporter into a bedroom and at one point reclining on the bed and putting his hands in his pants, and what he later said was an attempt to address his clothing. Late Wednesday, Mr. Giuliani called in to ABC, WABC Radio in New York, and said that he'd been tucking in his shirt after removing microphone wires. He chalked the scene's early release up to a scheme to discredit his recent attempts to push corruption accusations against Hunter Biden.
I don't think the Democrats are helped
Maury
by Borat.
Maury Dowd tweeted today. She's seen the thing, and she says it's much worse than The Guardian describes.
And I do not think I don't think I don't think Cohen is helping the Democrats at all. I think it's, you know, it's just too suspect and too open to interpretation. The Democrats are winning. I don't think this is a good time to unleash this guy, which I consider to be very self-serving.
But well, one thing we probably know.
What did you say, Linda?
It's a good thing most of the movie houses aren't open then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you have to see it.
I'm just thinking that, you know, we kind of know Giuliani is creepy in many ways. So I guess he's confirmed another layer.
Yeah, I have.
Alan, no, I don't think it's as important as the other. But honest to God, I'll take my laughs where I can get them these days.
Yeah, I have no problem with anybody making fun of really anyone in the political sphere, quite frankly. But Mr. Giuliani did say that Mr. Cohen was frightened by his call to the police, bolted away, and left him talking with the filmmaker's lawyers. So there we go. A lot there. What a week. We also get this letter from Michael. Said, can someone explain why one Democrat didn't attend in order to get an objection on the record at the Barrett hearing this morning? We also got this from...
Well, I think the answer to that is that it would have lessened the impact of every Democrat saying, no, we're not going to attend this thing because it's messed up. It's not right. It's unconstitutional the way we're looking at it. And so if you had one sitting there, it would have been covering your bets. And I think they decided, I'm sure they talked about it, they decided best to have nobody there.
And Mike writes and says the Republicans stacked the court starting under Obama in the late 1800s. We had 9 circuit courts. Coincidentally, we have 9 Supreme Court justices. We now have 13 circuit courts. I think it is fair that we add at least 3 Supreme Court justices. We are out of time, so we'll end it there. My thanks to everybody this morning, and thank you for being so patient with us as we waited for the vote this morning. And to hold on the line, my thanks to Jen and Vera, Linda, Alan, thank you very much. We will be back and continue with the Congressional Corner right after this short break.